This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. When you think of witches, what springs to mind? Is it this?
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Or maybe this?
Once upon a time, there was a typical American girl. It so happens that this girl is a witch.
What about this?
Girls, watch out for those weirdos.
We are the weirdos, mister.
Or this.
Look, another glorious morning. Makes me sick.
Witches have meant many things to many people, from terrifying hags who steal infants and live in huts, to empowered renegades who fight patriarchy and control their destinies. Two series featuring witches debuted this month, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix and the remake of Charmed on the CW. Then there are films like The Witch from 2016 and Suspiria, which came out this year. Halloween is a time for many of us to indulge in fantasy, but do these fictional witches point to the real ways that our views of women are changing? We'll put that question to our guests and stick around at the end to hear from two guests who tell us what it means to them to actually be witches. We'll get to that after this.
I put a spell on you. Cause you're mine.
This episode is sponsored by CuriosityStream. If you love documentaries, then CuriosityStream will be your new happy place. From the founder of the Discovery Channel, finally a streaming service for nerds, where you can binge-watch shows on science, history, nature, and more. With over 2,000 films and series and apps on most devices, there's truly something for everyone. Try it for 30 days free at curiositystream.com/NPR and enter promo code NPR.
Hi, this is Peter Sagal. For 20 years, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has been making fun of the news with comedians and celebrity guests. We got silly limericks. We got terrible impressions. If you think the news is a joke, wait till you hear our show. New podcast episodes are available every Saturday.
Kristen Soleil is an instructor and lecturer at the New School in New York. She is the author of Witches, Sluts, and Feminists. Kristen, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Pam Grossman is the host of the Witch Wave podcast. She's also the author of What is a Witch? And Waking the Witch, Reflections on Women, Magic, and Power. Pam, welcome.
So happy to be here.
And Constance Grady is a culture writer at Vox. Constance, glad to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let me start with you, Constance. I wonder if you could bring us up to speed with how witches are kind of played in pop culture right now. I always wonder if these kinds of things are part of a moment that is organic, or whether it's like one studio did a thing on witches and then all the other studios were like, ooh, that worked, let's do that too. How do you see it?
Well, I think we really see this particular witch moment as something that's been brewing, to make a terrible pun, for a few years now. Thank you. I think starting more or less at the beginning of the decade with sites like Tumblr and sort of the teen social media sphere, you start to see people exploring this fantasy of being a witch and having all of these powers that come from sort of rejecting the idea of enforced heteronormativity and sexual availability and being everything that our society kind of tells you that a girl should be, the idea of rejecting that and becoming powerful because of it. And you see that brewing and brewing and brewing, and then it sort of starts to explode over this past year as the Me Too movement enters the public sphere after the Harvey Weinstein accusations last October. And all of a sudden you get things like Lindy West's op-ed in the New York Times saying, yes, this is a witch hunt, I am a witch and I am hunting you, this idea of women taking on the mantle of the witch as a power fantasy. And so it's as this atmosphere has been growing for a few years that you start to see more and more studios investing in bringing this story to a larger audience. And that's when you start to see people developing new Sabrina and new Charmed and returning to these witch stories that have already been familiar to people for generations and sort of bringing them to a new audience.
We'll get to some of your comments on some of these new series and movies. Thanks to those of you who have commented this far. We'll get to those in just a minute. But Kristen Soleil, let me back up a little bit and maybe if we could give a little historical context. I wonder how you see this moment now in terms of this idea of witches as kind of an avatar for female empowerment. They haven't always been embraced, of course, historically. But then again, neither has the idea of female empowerment always been embraced.
Absolutely. I mean, the witch has been a symbol of female power and persecution since the early modern era, because 80 to 85% of those accused of witchcraft executed for witchcraft, at least in Europe, similar figures in America and around the world, really, were women. And we have, beginning with the, you know, origins of the feminist movement with the suffragists, the witch was used as a sort of martyr mascot. And then that kept coming up again in the second wave feminism and in this new, maybe fourth wave we're seeing of the pair of witches and feminism again rising together for a reason. So it's definitely been entwined for over 100 years at this point.
Pam Grossman, we heard a bit of the Wicked Witch of the West in the intro. The Wizard of Oz feels like it was kind of a seminal work. I don't know if you view it this way, but it feels like it was kind of seminal in terms of obviously society's view of witches, in terms of the green skin and the broomstick, and it was kind of canonical. But in this bigger sense, in terms of the way that we view gender roles and women's empowerment, did that role play a part at all, or was it just kind of fun entertainment?
Well, I think two roles in that film really played an important part in how we conceive of witches and women, because you not only have the Wicked Witch of the West, but you have Glinda the Good Witch.
Yeah.
So for the first time in pop culture, we saw that a witch could in fact be this positive, perhaps even feminist icon. And what's so interesting about The Wizard of Oz is that the man who wrote it, L. Frank Baum, was actually the son-in-law of one of those suffragists that Christian was just talking about, this amazing woman named Matilda Jocelyn Gage. So to Kristen's point, certainly the idea of witches and feminism have been kind of baked together in this wonderful layer cake, and absolutely the 1939 film popularized that concept of this full spectrum of witchery and feminism.
And then, of course, Pam, you had the musical Wicked, which kind of described itself as the untold story of the Witches of Oz, where Glinda turned out just to be kind of just a social climber. And then Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West, turned out to be this genuinely powerful, awkward, but deep person who had been maligned. It was kind of an interesting flip on the original.
Absolutely. And we've seen that trope, the idea of sympathizing with a persecuted witch, happening over and over again. And again, the feminists were really responsible for kind of retelling the story of witchcraft and persecution. And then through pop culture and through politics, helping us reform our ideas about witches. Elphaba is a great example because she's also a real activist, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And a lot of these popular witches, you know, especially if you think of Hermione, I'm sure we'll get into the new Sabrina in a moment, but then they become defenders of outcasts, outsiders, and other marginalized people.
Hermione was written by J.K. Rowling. If you've only seen the movies and not read the book, she's very much written as a like grade A social justice warrior throughout the scope of those seven novels. We are speaking to Pam Grossman, the host of the podcast The Witch Wave and the author of the book Waking the Witch, Kristen Soleil, an instructor at the New School in New York and the author of Witches, Sluts, and Feminist, and Constance Grady, culture writer from Vox. Glad to see some fellow fans of Wicked in our audience, including Amy, who writes, FYI, the Broadway community is celebrating the 15th anniversary of the musical Wicked. The epic songs Defying Gravity and For Good are timeless and timely. Elizabeth wrote on our Facebook page, in the early 19th century, the downtrodden Irish immigrants to the U.S. took what started out as a derisive term, Paddy, and adopted it as an honored nickname. Women are now embracing the term witch the same way. Witches traditionally are powerful and able, and we women need to embrace our power and strength. Kristen, I think another one of the classic witch characters that a lot of us grew up with, either in First Run or on Nick at Night, is Elizabeth Montgomery as Samantha from Bewitched. Here she is in an exchange with Darren, played by Dick York, from Bewitched back in 1964.
I meant it when I said no more spell.
I promise.
Under any circumstances?
Well, under any circumstances.
Good. You know, it's just a matter of willpower, self-control, and
what's the matter?
I don't know. can't understand it. I had the car checked just before we left.
Is that little needle pointing to E mean anything?
Yes, it means I forgot to get gas. The last station's about 6 miles back. It's a long walk.
It certainly is.
Really is raining out there.
Pouring.
Sam.
What?
Sam, would you...
Darren.
Elizabeth Montgomery and Dick York as Samantha and Darren from Bewitched. Kristen, there's a really interesting sub-dynamic going on where he tells her, don't use their magic, and then all of a sudden, he needs it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think magic within Bewitched can be sort of a symbol for feminism. I mean, the series came out the year after The Feminine Mystique. Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique was published, and the women's liberation movement was really being galvanized. And yes, the show seems kind of fluffy on one hand. It is a white, upper middle class housewife, but she is sort of, maligned by her husband, Darren, for having these powers. He's very afraid of them because they give her agency. They give her power outside, the patriarchal structures, the structures of husband and wife. So I think there is this sort of radical undercurrent for that show that people might miss. But if you watch it today, you can really see how she's using her witchcraft, aka her, her feminist thought to empower herself and get her out of these situations that her husband gets her into mostly.
Pam, do we get a sense that ABC kind of knew what it was doing when it created this dynamic, or did it kind of stumble into it?
I imagine they did. I think that certainly this was in the air. This was in the zeitgeist, as it were. And if you think about the feminist movement, especially the second wave, suddenly you had people who were speaking and using their voices who hadn't spoken and used their voices before. So magic is a powerful metaphor for that.
More in a moment with Pam Grossman, Kristen Soleil, and Constance Grady. We'll hear from John Carpenter in a moment, and we'll get to some more of your questions and thoughts as well. I'm Joshua Johnson, glad to be with you on this Halloween. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
'Cause it's witchcraft, wicked witchcraft, and although I know it's strictly taboo.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Constance Grady, let me come back to you. Let's talk about the 90s a little bit. There are two particular 90s references that I'd love you to react to. One of them is one that has been getting a lot of attention lately because it celebrated its 25th anniversary this year. Here's Bette Midler, Kathy Najimy, and Sarah Jessica Parker in 1993 in Hocus Pocus.
We must find the book, brew the potion, and suck the lives out of the children of Salem before sunrise. Otherwise, it's curtains. We evaporate. We cease to exist. Dost thou comprehend?
Well, you explained it beautifully, Winnie, the way you sort of started out with the adventure part and then you sort of slowly...
Explain what?
Hocus Pocus from 1993. I was 13. I saw this in the movie theaters. I was like, I don't know why I love this movie, but I'm going to love this movie for the rest of my life. So that's Hocus Pocus. Then there's also the movie The Craft from 1996. Here's Robin Tunney and Rachel True in The Craft.
I drink of my sisters and I ask for the ability to not hate those who hate me, especially racist pieces of bleach blonde like Laura Lizzie.
Constance, these feel like two very different kinds of depictions from the 90s, but were there any common bonds to them?
I think there are certain similarities. I think both of those movies are sort of grappling with the kind of Wizard of Oz, Margaret Hamilton idea of the witch that we talked about earlier, right? The idea of the witch is this wicked, threatening woman who is villainous and a threat to the status quo. And in Hocus Pocus, the way it sort of deals with that is it makes the witches fun and bumbling, and they're not totally threatening because they're so bad at what they're doing. but in the end, of course, the modern kids are victorious and the witches are sent away and are defeated and you don't have to worry about them ever again. The Craft kind of wants to embrace the idea of the Wicked Witch a little bit more. It sort of the joy of that movie is watching these girls gain access to this power and sort of spiral out of control and go feral in this kind of really satisfying way. But at the end of the movie, they still have to be restored to the status quo, right? Because it would be too threatening at that point in time if they got to just have all of this untrammeled power. So the source of their power, which is officially genderless, but the movie consistently refers to him as a male, and sometimes they call him Daddy, the source of their power puts restrictions on them. And the only the witch who sort of responds to those restrictions appropriately, Sarah, gets to keep her power. The ones who rebel against those restrictions and try to just do whatever they want get punished and have to be sort of sent off to an insane asylum in straitjackets in order for the status quo to be restored. So in a way, both of these movies are about the idea of wanting to bring the Wicked Witch fantasy into the end of the 20th century and wanting to get access to that power, but not being quite able to do so with wholeheartedly.
Glad to hear from some of you about your favorite references to witches in movies, TV, and books. Mark tweeted, Sylvia Federici's book, Caliban and the Witch, that's C-A-L-I-B-A-N, Caliban and the Witch, is essential reading on how early capitalism and misogynist witch hunts were tied together. And the current season of American Horror Story is all about witches trying to save the world. Molly tweeted, how about the episode of Broad City called Witches, when Abby and Ilana learn to embrace witchiness as a powerful part of womanhood and perhaps actual magic? Kristen Soleil, let's talk a little bit about American Horror Story, particularly the third season of the anthology series, American Horror Story Coven, which takes place in New Orleans. Here is Jessica Lange as Fiona Good from the third season.
Cher, I took down your entire company with about as much effort as it takes for me to mix myself a Rob Roy. And Marie is immortal. For Christ's sake, you think we're worried about guns? Which reminds me, I need a drink.
Jessica Lange as Fiona Good in American Horror Story Coven. Now, Kristen, Fiona Good is not very good in the series. She sucks people's life forces to remain eternally young, but she's always got a quip. She's one step ahead of her enemies. She dresses fabulously. And it seems like even when witches are evil in pop culture, they still kind of are portrayed as enviable.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the femme fatale archetype that is often one of the visions of the witch that we see. And we are afraid of her, but we love her. You know, we're drawn to these things that we fear. And I think that's what makes witches so appealing, particularly someone like Fiona. We want to see her be wicked, and then we want to see her be punished for it. Unfortunately, that's what most people want to see. And so that's kind of what plays out within that series without too many spoilers, although it was many years ago. So
nice.
You've probably seen it.
I wonder how you see that, though, Kristen. I mean, you know, when we look at the way that different struggles for equality or for social ascendance are depicted, you know, sometimes it feels like a similar cycle. You know, you have these characters that are very noble, and then eventually we get to these characters that are renegades. You know, we have the Sidney Poitier is the first wave, and then you've got blaxploitation movies. You've got Shaft, that's the second wave. You have these characters who are very admirable and noble, and then you have characters who are like, you know, screw it, I'm kicking butts and taking names.
Yeah, I mean, it just speaks to the complicated nature of actual human beings. So in that way, there's sort of a humanization that's happening when we see these multifaceted witches.
Busy Black Woman tweeted, so thankful for your guest's alternative perspective on Bewitched. That's the one witch I never liked because of her husband's demands that she not use her powers. Pam Grossman, I wonder if you could help me with this. The use of the word witch. I don't know if you've encountered this, but I've encountered a lot of men who have used the W word because they knew they weren't allowed to use the B word. This word is very charged for a lot of men. I mean, even that song by Frank Sinatra, Witchcraft, where he says there's just no nicer witch than you, I think that's kind of a sideways reference to that B word. Is that something we have to grapple with?
Absolutely. And we see it in politics all the time. You can Google pretty much any female politician, and no matter what side of the aisle they're on, you will find them photoshopped as a witch. So this really is still a negative epithet that a lot of people use to put women in their place, to shame them, to shut them up, especially women who are in the public eye, who have opinions, and who dare to speak their mind.
Yeah, and I wonder kind of, Constance, what we do with that mixed connotation. Noelle wrote on our Facebook page, I don't see the concept of witches as a positive feminist force in mainstream American society. If a woman says she identifies as a witch in any sense of the word, she's only embraced for that identification in pagan culture. The word witch still has negative connotations like witch hunt, so I don't see it as a way for feminists to assert themselves and be heard as strong, powerful voices in society. And Kathleen wrote on our Facebook page, here's what I learned as a young girl from The Wizard of Oz. Well-behaved, sweet witches are always beautiful, graceful, and kind. Witches who strive for power are ugly, mean, and bitter. Not exactly a feminist message. Constance?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the listeners aren't wrong to see either of those messages there. I mean, one of the lines in The Wizard of Oz, right, is Dorothy says, witches are old and ugly, and Glinda says, no, only bad witches are old and ugly, good witches are beautiful. There's definitely a kind of classic Madonna whore, good woman, bad woman dichotomy here, where women who adhere to the status quo, like the heroine of the craft, Sarah, does, get to be powerful to a certain extent, as long as they use their power in a way that is really, that falls in line with the way the men in power want them to do it. And women who try to rebel against the status quo are coded as ugly and undesirable and need to be pushed away and given and punished for their behavior. Yeah. I think that what the witch fantasy that we're seeing right now does is try to embrace the idea of the bad witch more. That's why we're seeing women dressed as witches in political protests. We're seeing things like in pop culture, in the AMC show Dietland, there's this idea of a feminist vigilante group. And when they go out and do their thing, they wear witch masks to become these threatening figures who destabilize the status quo. But at the same time, I think we're still struggling to find a way to consistently tell stories about genuinely transgressive, threatening women in a way that celebrates them rather than tries to, in the end, punish them and restore the status quo.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the very first things that Glinda asks Dorothy once Dorothy crushes the Wicked Witch of the North is, are you a good witch or a bad witch? Like, you have this power. First thing I need to do is figure out what to do with you before kind of we can go any further. Ramona emailed, my daughters and I started watching the new Sabrina series on Netflix this week. They said it was cool that Sabrina didn't just do what she was told and she questioned what was intended for her. I was so happy. Pam, let me come back to you. I'm interested in your perspective on this series. Here's a clip of Kiernan Shipka as the witch Sabrina in Netflix's new series, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. She's asking other witches for help after some bullies picked on a friend of hers who is non-gender binary. Here's that clip from The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
There are four mortal boys who need to be taught a lesson. Help me teach them. And I'll stay right where I am at Baxter High.
Are they handsome, at least?
It's always more fun when they're handsome.
Kiernan Shipka in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix. Glad to get some of your thoughts on the first episode, including a few of you whose comments were similar to what Cherie wrote on our Facebook page. I watched the first episode of Sabrina. I like the darker Sabrina in some ways, but tying her in with devil worship is a big turnoff for me as a person who lives the witch life. And Wayne says, I watched about half of the first episode of Sabrina. It's much darker than I expected, and they seem to blur the line between witch and devil worship. What about that, Pam, in terms of this kind of revenge on bad men idea that makes the remake so much darker than the original sitcom?
First of all, I love the new Sabrina, and I would encourage some of these listeners to maybe watch a couple more episodes in, because without giving too many spoilers away, what ends up happening is Sabrina realizes that the Church of Night, this satanic, dark witch cult that she's raised in, is actually this patriarchal structure too. And so she rejects or grapples with, should she reject this Church of Night, this patriarchy, at the same time as she's grappling with the patriarchal forces in her day-to-day life as, you know, a human. So I really love this line that Sabrina says early on in the series. She says that she wants to choose a third way. She doesn't want to be necessarily all good or all evil. She wants to be herself. And I think that's a really important message as particularly young women are navigating the world right now.
Some of you have shared your stories with us about how images of witches have affected your life, particularly those of you who have some descendants who have some ancestry in America's dealings with witch trials. Lois writes, I have an ancestor from Salem, a great-great-great aunt who was declared to be a witch. After a brief trial, she was dunked and drowned. Sometime later, she was declared innocent, and her husband was paid $20. As an elementary school teacher, I have dressed as a witch each year and require my students to draw pictures of me and talk about witches. I tell them about my ancestor. Jen in Chapel Hill, North Carolina writes, in high school in the mid-90s, many of us styled ourselves as witches. We read books on Wicca and cast spells, quote-unquote, late at night during slumber parties. When The Craft came out, we poo-pooed it as pedestrian, unlike our witchcraft. In retrospect, I think it was our way of claiming and owning our power. In early 90s North Florida, we didn't have real feminist heroes, so I think we clung to the only strong women we could see. And Matthew tweeted, witchcraft is a power fantasy that does not augment reality. It's make-believe. Superman and Wonder Woman do not exist. It's only cosplay. Kristen, what do you think?
About all of those, there's a lot to say.
There is.
First, there are millions of neo-pagan and pagan practitioners who would beg to differ that witchcraft is not supernatural fantasy, and it is a nature-based practice that brings a lot of people strength and community and solace, particularly in these times in non-hierarchical ways. So I definitely think the idea of witchcraft in films and in history is very different than the witchcraft people practice today. So that's one thing. And I think it's also important when we talk about the witch to realize, yes, the witch is an archetype, and that can be very fun. But there are a lot of, you know, thousands of real people, the majority women, that were accused of witchcraft and suffered and died because of it. So it's important to remember that history also when we're talking about the fun, cackling, haunted hags of this time of year.
Sarah writes, as a mother of a 13-year-old daughter, I think Sabrina couldn't have come at a better time. She stands up for her friends, calls out school administrators for being sexual violence apologists. We love it. Also hearing from several of you about diversity among witches in pop culture, R writes, are there gay witches in literature and on TV? Yes, indeed there are. Willow on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, for example. Denise writes, Willow was strong, smart, and sensitive, kind, but capable of evil, and an open lesbian in the 90s, ahead of her time. Robert in Cliff Springs, New York writes, men can be witches too. I'm a guy who's been practicing the craft for a number of years. Please do not call me a warlock. To many pagans, this is a derogatory term, nor are all witches Wiccan. Before we let y'all go, I wonder if there are any depictions that you particularly like that don't quite get the attention you think they should. Pam, any depictions that you love that maybe fly under the radar?
Oh, goodness. I'm a little old-fashioned, so I love Jillian Holleroyd from Bell, Book, and Candle. Mm-hmm. She is magical, she's stylish, and she's lots of fun.
Kristen?
Oh, man. I think she gets her due, but Maleficent, and especially the new way they reframed Maleficent's story.
And Constance?
Oh, gosh, this is so tricky, but I'm going to have to stick with the Disney villain and say Ursula the Sea Witch from The Little Mermaid, who is 100% the best part of that movie and has the best Disney villain song.
Also worth noting that the new charm has a trio of Latina sisters who are witches. Constance Grady, culture writer at Vox. Constance, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Pam Grossman and Kristen Soleil, before the two of you go, we would love some more time to speak to you. While we were planning this conversation, our producer Paige Osborne mentioned that you are both actually witches, and I don't personally have a ton of experience with witches or witchcraft or witch identity, but we do have plenty of cultural stereotypes and things that I and probably many other people have been told. So we figured we'd just take this opportunity to ask you a few questions about witches in real life. First question, what is a witch? That term gets thrown around a lot, but I wonder if you would define it for us as you see it. Kristen, let's start with you. What is a witch?
That is the eternal question. A witch can actually be whatever you want her to be, or them, or him. A witch is not defined by a gender. It's not defined by one particular practice. You can be a Christian witch, a satanic witch, a Jewish witch, a Wiccan witch, a voodoo practitioner that identifies as a witch, etc. So I think there's not really one narrow definition, but to me, it's someone who feels they have the power to change their own life and to, make change in the world around them through nature-based practices, through communal practices. And sorry if that sounds vague, but it just means so many different things. You know, it's hard to really pin down, actually.
A Christian witch, Kristen?
Yes, actually, my mother is a Christian witch.
Really?
She was raised Catholic, but there's a lot of traditions of Catholic folk magic where you sort of use the figures, the saints, the holy days in sort of different ways that sort of harken back to the time when early Christianity was blending with pagan traditions, and making this sort of other kind of shadow Christianity below the surface.
Kind of some of the times when Christianity was spreading, but the cultures to which it spread kept some of their previous traditions even as they incorporated new traditions.
Absolutely, yes.
Was your mother your inlet to witchcraft, Kristen?
Yes. And she did not use that word witch because that was still, a pejorative until maybe even now. But now she's okay with that word. But yes, she definitely introduced me to this practice.
Pam Grossman, what about you? What is a witch in your view?
And to Kristen's point, whenever I get asked this, I sort of stiffen in my chair. Here we go. Because it really is, it depends on the context. When we're talking about a spiritual practitioner of some kind of witchcraft, as opposed to the archetype of the witch, I would say that a witch is someone who honors the cycles of nature and of their body, someone who works with energy and consciousness to transform their life and the world.
What was your inlet to witchcraft, Pam?
So when I was a child, I loved playing in the woods, and I very intuitively did all these kinds of rituals and really entered that state of deep imaginal play that I think comes very naturally to a lot of children. And I was very interested in magic, in mythology, in anything that had to do with powerful, magical women. I was very lucky to grow up in the 80s when there were cartoons like She-Ra, where you could see these powerful, transformative, magical female protagonists. So I think that got in my bloodstream a little bit. But then when I was a teenager, I started discovering that there were actually spell books, literally in the mall. There were stores like Walden Books and B. Dalton where you could buy these books of spells and learn about what witches were. So I started experimenting with these spells. And to my great surprise, some of them worked. And, that was something that was really meaningful to me, because I think, like a lot of teenagers, I felt a bit like an outsider. I felt like there were a lot of things in my life that were suddenly out of my control. And witchcraft was a way for me to feel like I had some agency in my life.
Pam, what was the first spell that you attempted that worked?
Oh, my goodness. It was a love spell. Mm-hmm. It was actually a spell for somebody else.
Oh.
My sister had a party. She was older than me, and she had some friends over, and one of her friends found out that I did magic, or was interested in magic, and she said, will you do a spell for me? And so I did a love spell for her, and lo and behold, she made out with that boy.
There you go. Results. Results, yes, is the name of the game. Kristen, what about you? What was the first spell that you cast that worked?
I think it was also a love spell, because that's what baby witches do. But I certainly have plenty of exciting adult spells that have worked even better ways. But yeah, I definitely started with the love spell.
And by the way, am I using these terms correctly in terms of spells and casting it? Like, one of the things that one of our listeners noted today, he identifies as a witch, and he said, do not call me a warlock. He considered it offensive. Kristen, are there certain kind of terms or tropes or stereotypes that tend to come up among people who aren't witches that kind of grate on you the most?
Yeah, and I think they're different for everyone, again, because some people own the term warlock and they're fine with that. And again, some people practice magic in the same way Pam and I might, but they don't identify as a witch. So it really depends on the individual. But yeah, I think going back to one of those comments on Facebook you mentioned, that association with Satan and witchcraft, people get really upset about that. I actually like it, because I think Satan is a great symbol within Christianity, within, as you know, this eternal rebel. Like, you know, people have been any sort of, you know, the most marginalized in our society are always associated with, like, satanic practices. And so I think we should, demystify the idea of something being satanic, you know, because there is no Satan. I'm sorry. It's just not real in the way that people think of it. So I don't think there's any harm in talking about Satan more.
Pam, a really strong theme that I'm hearing from both of you and that we heard in the show today had to do with this idea of rebellion, of being a bit of a renegade. How do you see that? I wonder, particularly as it relates to this idea, for example, you know, I was raised Baptist, and there are Baptists and Methodists and Episcopalians and Catholics and non-denominational Christians, but at the end of the day, it is all kind of a college of faiths that believe in the divinity of a triune God. Is there any uniformity to all these kind of various rebellious forms of witchcraft?
You know, uniformity is always a tough thing to talk about when it comes to witches, because there are so many different styles of witchcraft, so many different ways that people identify as witches. I would say that, yes, absolutely, you know, certainly heteronormative straight white dudes can call themselves witches, but more often than not, the people who are attracted to the archetype of the witch are familiar with being marginalized in some sort of way. They're queer, they're women, they're people of color, they're people who understand what it feels like to not always be on top and to not always have all the control and all the power. And so I think if you go back throughout history, often the people who were called witches, they were others. They were the heretics. They were people that the church saw threatening to, you know, their very patriarchal paradigm. And so certainly anybody can be a witch, but I really do believe that it's a powerful and potent icon for those of us who feel as though a lot of the power structures that are still in control are, you know, very, very patriarchal and very, very oppressive in a lot of ways.
Okay, so there's four terms that I need to kind of peel back, Kristen, that I think mm-hmm. often get associated with magic, and that's pagan, Wiccan,
okay,
Celtic, and Druids. First of all, okay, are pagans witches?
Pagans can be witches. Witches don't have to identify as pagan. It's sort of like this, rectangle square situation.
Right. All squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares.
Yes, exactly. Pagan in the Christian sense, you know, means heathen, but pagan in the people who identify as pagan sense means nature-based practitioner.
That's another word, heathen. I'm glad you mentioned that one.
Right, right. So that would just be a heretic, the anti-Christian.
Right, a non-believer.
And then we have...
Wiccan.
Wiccan. Wicca is a religion, and many practitioners of Wicca call themselves witches. But there is a misconception that all witches are Wiccan, and like one of your listeners wrote, that is definitely not true. Like, you know, for example, you know, the Wiccan reed, you know, there's a belief that whatever you put out into the world will come back three times as great. And there's a lot of witches who don't believe that. That comes into play when we're talking about, you know, hexing. There's been a lot of hexes on politicians, and a lot, if you're a Wiccan, that wouldn't be a good idea for you because you'll get that energy back threefold. If you're not, doesn't matter. So that's another thing. People a lot of times think Wiccans, Wiccan means just any witch. That's not true. The Celts were a group of peoples in Ireland and the United Kingdom in pre-modern times, and a lot of their belief systems filtered into some of the pagan practices that we might see today, like even Halloween, Samhain, that comes from Celtic ritual. Druids, help me on this one, Pam. How do we exactly define the Druids? I know they're the priests and the priestesses.
Mm-hmm. It's a slippery word as well, but it's, again, a nature-based tradition in that part of the world as well.
Yeah.
Pam, at what point did you come to believe that your strand of witchcraft, your belief in witchcraft was viable? I think that's one of the core questions that people of faith are often asked, is like, how do you know there's a God? How do you know that you're not just praying to comfort yourself or to reinforce your own beliefs? What makes you believe that witchcraft is real?
I love that question because it's so impossible to answer. but I'll do my best. You know, as with a lot of people who explore their spirituality throughout their life, I've had a whole journey with it, and times that I felt closer to it and times that I drifted a little further from it, and then times I doubled or tripled down on it. And so I first believed it was real because I'm actually quite a pragmatic and at times rather skeptical and certainly critical person, and I wouldn't have bothered with it if it wasn't actually working. You know, like I would do spells as a teenager and they would work. And we can certainly sit here and talk about all the reasons why. You know, is it a placebo? Is it a coincidence?
Well, that's exactly what I was kind of wondering, is how did yeah. you suss out that it was the spell that worked and not like a placebo effect or something that would have happened anyway just because you made the right decisions?
Because I think that the core of faith is this idea of trust, and a big part of my spiritual practice is about honoring mystery. I love inquiry. I love answers. But I also know that as human beings, we will never know everything. And the questions are more interesting to me often than the answers are. So I'm someone who's very comfortable with mystery. I think mystery is holy. I think it's a space where the imagination can really take hold of us. Mm-hmm. And as additionally, you know, a lot of my practice involves artwork and creativity, and I really see a relationship between magic and art as well. And so that's been really, really meaningful for me too.
I know we have
so
to.
So it's not.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know we have to let you two go shortly. We only have the studio for a few more minutes. But Kristen, I wanted to ask you the same thing. What makes you convinced? What makes you sure that witchcraft is real, that your practice works?
Sure. And I agree with everything Pam said. And I would add also that all kinds of spiritual practices are not just about results. It's also about community. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a scientifically proven fact, that gathering together with like-minded people raises your energy, raises your, the dopamine, and lowers cortisol levels, you know. So there's power in gathering with people who have a similar bent spiritually. So I think that for me clinches it. So yeah, I may have these experiences where ABC spells worked. Oh my God, that's amazing. But really, in the end, it is the community which brings me the greatest strength. And that can happen with witchcraft, and it can happen with other, you know, practices as well. But yeah, that's what works for me.
One last thing I would ask before I let you go, Pam, you know, as as Christians, people who believe in the Abrahamic faiths believe that if they live a good life and they treat people well and they honor God and follow God's precepts, whatever they conceive God to be, that they will go to a divine paradise, a reward, heaven. And if they don't, then they will end up in hell, that there is an eternal after effect for the way they practice their faiths, for their spiritual walk. If you, Pam, are, for lack of a better term, a good witch here on Earth, what do you believe will happen when you die?
I'm going to go back to that mystery thing I was talking about. I absolutely have no idea, and I'm okay with that. And being a witch helps me actually feel okay with the not knowing. Because for me, it's about being in the present. It's about honoring the body, honoring my community, being of service to people, making my life and this world as loving, compassionate, and magical as it possibly can be. And for me, that's the reward.
Kristen, what about you? If you are a good person and a good witch here on Earth, what do you believe will happen to you when you die?
I feel like I will go back to the earth and be part of this plane that we all live on once more. And I agree with Pam. The mystery is part of the reason I'm also a witch, and I'm okay with that mystery. But yes, I think rotting into the ground is a beautiful thing to look forward to.
Oh, one more question I would ask. One more question. I know that there are a number of people across the country, around the world, who will be dressing up as witches and warlocks and wizards for Halloween. What are you two doing for Halloween, if anything?
I am going down to the University of Alabama to give a talk about the history of the witch and reproductive rights.
And Pam, what about you?
Well, this is also a holiday in the pagan community called Samhain, which is a time for us to honor our ancestors. They always say this is the time of year when the veil between worlds is thinnest. You'll hear that expression a lot. So I'm going to be doing some work to honor my ancestors, and I'm also going to watch some scary movies and eat a ton of candy.
Pam Grossman, the host of the podcast Witch Wave and the author of What is a Witch and Waking the Witch, Reflections on Women, Magic, and Power. And Kristen Soleil, an instructor and lecturer at the New School in New York and the author of Witches, Sluts, Feminists. Pam, Kristen, we appreciate you answering our questions. Thanks very much. This conversation was produced by Paige Osborne. To learn more about her and the rest of the staff, visit theoneA.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.